Okay, I was able to, no, I'm not able to do the conference controls. Could you go ahead and click on record? Unless it says stop recording.
It does say stop recording.
Okay, then I was able to do it, even though it didn't let me log in as the host before. Okay, good. Okay, so Bill has 25 years of experience in training and development, and now he owns a coaching, training, and consulting business, has a lot of background in HR, and has worked with individuals and done a lot of work on helping to keep people motivated. So he has put together a great presentation for us today, and I'd like to turn this over to him.
Thank you. Thank you, Carol. And Carol is now no longer the moderator. She's going to be the colleague in this presentation. Thank you, Carol. Could I just hear quickly who's on the line? I know Pat, Lewis, Elaine, and Jack, and Donna, and Julie. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Bill.
And Alice and David are on the line. Who else is on?
Alice Frazier.
Okay. Thank you. Hi, Alice Frazier. Okay, great. Our goal today is to discuss how we can keep ourselves motivated and assist others during this very difficult time. I hope you've all received the worksheet, or we're calling them discussion guides. So please use them to follow the discussion and record any key points.
I love the quote that you provided us here at the beginning. Motivation is a fire from within. If someone else tries to light that fire under you, chances are it will burn briefly. Now, that seems to remind us that those of us who are managers, for example, that it can be really hard to motivate other people.
You know, that's absolutely true. And what we're going to be doing in the next 45 minutes is to look not only, we'll be looking at two things, how we can find motivation and a motivational environment really for ourselves, but also how to identify that fuel that's inside of other people. So
I think it might be helpful if we ask the folks on the line to share some of the motivational issues they find themselves facing right now so that we can kind of bring that as a thread through our discussion.
Okay.
Anybody want to step up and say, you know, what's at the top of your mind? What's keeping you up at night in terms of people you're trying to motivate or even in terms of motivating yourself?
What do you think, Pat?
This is Jack and Elaine from the Detroit metro area. And we have 19 newspapers and between us about 32 sales reps that are up against a really tough economy as everyone else is in the United States. But just keeping them motivated, going in, they're seeing a lot of empty or vacant retail spaces in strip centers and all up and in. They'll come in and say, there's 25% of my territory is closed. So just with that concept in mind, I think that's what all of us may be facing is it's a down economy. How do we keep the sales reps motivated to say positive things? Because there are new businesses coming online and insight, and there's a lot of entrepreneurship going on because many of those people that have been either downsized or let go from larger corporations are opening their own landscape company, their own barbershop, their own entrepreneurial type of a something. So we try to keep them motivated to say, you know, you need to keep going into every store, asking everyone for if they know anyone else for referrals. But we're kind of looking for new ideas on what anyone else may have done to keep the staff motivated with all this.
Okay, well, that's some great input. We'll try to address some of that. It sounds like you're doing a lot of right things, too, focusing on the fact that the landscape has changed and kind of, you know, don't think in your usual paradigm. You have to think a little bit differently.
Right, and then there's the fact that we need to keep ourselves motivated because you know, with the staff coming in whining and moaning the whole time, we need to make sure that we keep a very positive outlook on everything. And as a matter of fact, we share and remind people, if someone says, how's business, even if your territory is down, you tell them, hey, business is looking good. We're getting new accounts in here. We have people that are getting response. Never say, oh, you know, I'm down 25% in my territory too. Because, you know, so we remind the sales staff to do that, but we are looking for some secrets. If any of you have secrets, we want to know.
Okay. Thank you, Elaine. Carol, do you think it'd be if we could spend a little time at the end of this of our discussion and just ask for folks any ideas they might have, and we can do some brainstorming after you've had a chance to think about the things we're talking about. Perhaps something will come to mind, or maybe you have some things that you're doing now to help motivate the staff. So, what do you think, Carol? We'll spend a little time at the end.
I think that's a great way.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and move on to the to your first observation here, that people join companies and quit dull, non-challenging assignments.
You know, thank you, Carol. On the worksheet, we're just below that first quote on the top of page one. This quote, I've changed it a little bit. It used to be before the recent events, it was people join companies but quit their bosses. Now, and that may still be true, but also people join companies and motivationally, if it's dull, if it's not challenging, or if some way that the job doesn't, the environment doesn't seem to be supportive, people are leaving. I'd like to move down to the next quote, which is one by Winston Churchill. And he says that attitude is a little thing that makes a big difference. And Elaine just mentioned, I think, very, very cogently that she's struggling, and I know all of you are, to keep not only we all are, to keep our attitudes positive, but also to help the other folks. And really, motivation starts and ends with you or the individuals you work with. It's always up to the individual to be aware of what turns them on and what turns them off. So I'm going to be looking for the rest of my discussion anyway internally rather than externally for motivational factors. Also, there's an opportunity to look back to the last century, and, you know, I laugh because it was the 1900s. But at any rate, Kurt Lewin in the middle of the 1900s, who's a social scientist, came up with this saying that attitude affects behavior, which affects productivity. And he created this model to explain the impact of attitude on our behavior. It sounds very intuitive, but it's also extremely powerful. As you know, some people with positive attitudes can be expected to be more productive than those with negative attitudes.
Bill, I'd just like to ask you something here.
Sure.
And that is, how can we help people understand that they really own this equation, that they have to own their attitude in order to generate that positive behavior and get them to speak up for what they need? For example, if they find that the work is dull and unsatisfying and that it's not particularly motivating to them, how can we as managers help them share with us their needs?
Good point. As leaders, as managers and supervisors, one of our major tasks, of course, is to constantly stay in touch with our folks, with the people that depend on us, the people that we lead. And one of those is to continue the dialogue. And how's it going? And if, as Elaine pointed out, and Elaine, I'm not picking on you. You just gave us the best example, actually the only example. But
you can pick on me. Everybody else does.
Okay. So there's a good attitude. I love it. We need to stay in touch with our folks. And when they start blaming other things, like blaming the economy, no one on this call is responsible for the economy. No one really individually is. However, we want to remind them that individually they're responsible for their response. We have to take ownership of that. And again, counseling them not to say negative things to customers is an example to stay positive. And when they do, their attitude's going to change. And I think the productivity, people will be more likely to give those advertising sales reps referrals or perhaps even business.
One of the things I remember at Procter & Gamble appreciating about my management was I did feel that they listened to me. Now, we were very big on personal responsibility, and it seemed like the ears were always open to listen to our needs. And one of the things that as the work evolved, or I should say devolved from my perspective, because in my last 5 years there, I was not doing the work that I preferred. It's just the way things were, what was available. So I was doing sales analysis, and I'm more of a people person, and I had always wanted to do training, and what my manager did to help me deal with the fact that a lot of my core responsibilities were not satisfying to me was he let me become one of the people who went around when there was a big training initiative and joined the people who had training full-time as their responsibility to deploy training. Now, that did a couple things. One thing, I'm sure it kept me in the job at least 4 years longer than I would have stayed otherwise because of the satisfaction. But in the end, it also helped me make the decision to retire early to pursue what I really love to do.
I was just
so it's not a double-edged sword, but it kept me there for 4 years longer. So.
I was just about to give them kudos for retention, but I think I'll hold off on that comment.
Yeah, there's a question.
Okay. Another way to look at attitude and why it's so difficult for us to get a handle on it is if you can picture in your mind an iceberg, and a tiny part of that iceberg is sticking above the water, and the rest is invisible. There's a huge chunk of it, maybe 10 or 12 times as much volume under the water. And the visible part is our productivity and our behavior. What's under it is our emotions, which are driven by our thinking. And that's why it's extremely important for us to stay in touch with our own thinking. In other words, when we wake up in the morning and go, oh, God, we need to stop ourselves there and say, well, wait a minute. I can look at this a lot of different ways, and I need to make a choice. But also with your staff and your employees, asking them questions will help them to look below the surface to the emotions and the thinking that's really driving that behavior. There's another quote in the middle of the page. One needs something to believe in, something for which one can have a wholehearted enthusiasm. But we all have core beliefs, desires, and often they're masked by the day-to-day demands of our environment. And we keep in mind that our job as supervisors is to identify these core beliefs, their wants and needs, and use them to create that that motivational environment for them.
Hey, Bill, this is Lou Rotel. I have a question I'd like to throw out to the group. You know, in terms of today's environment, you know, everybody's what is on their mind, and I agree everything with what you said so far, but I still see the challenge out there as the work environment has changed so dramatically. I mean, you talk about motivation in the workplace and motivating your sales force, and people right now are just trying to hang on to their jobs if they have one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and taking time to, you know, do one-on-one counseling with your workforce. I mean, people right now are struggling with the workloads that they have.
Yep.
I'm throwing out the question to the group. Do you see those as challenges?
Well, if no one else has a comment, I will say that in my coaching practice, I certainly see it. I see people who are just hanging on or trying to figure out how to think differently in order to find a new role for themselves within a company or to move on to something else because of what their fears are as far as the future. And I think that one of the most important things that we can provide people, either as a coach or a coaching manager, is the sounding board to openly discuss what's going on, what emotions and feelings are behind it, and options. What are the options? I think that I don't want to get too much into that, but I know it comes later in your presentation. But helping people to see that there may be alternatives or a different way of thinking about something. So that, for example, there may be times in our lives, like I talked about, you know, really being able to value having some new job responsibilities given to me. There were other times in my life when the most important thing was to have the paycheck and the security, and that was very motivating. So being able to reinforce that was important. I sat with a young woman yesterday who was saying, you know, her job is very stressful. She works a lot of long hours. Her pay is good. But bottom line is the reason that she really appreciates her job is the flexibility her manager gives her to change her hours around on a weekly basis to meet her family needs. So I think that says to me that one of the things we can do is try to understand people as individuals. And it doesn't have to take weekly, long-term counseling sessions. It's just that touch-base thing where your ears are always open and you can engage in a short conversation about how things are going.
I agree. And we really don't have much else at this point. A number of my clients are telling me that again, as you stated, there's more work to do because there's fewer people because of layoffs. There's a perceived lack of opportunity out there to create new business or to carry on business. So it's difficult for us to increase any kind of rewards because that's out of our hands, or decrease the workload. What we're doing, I think, in this situation, is that we're trying to get folks to get a handle on what will make them function, what will get rid of some of the fear, what will have them see options, as Carol's pointed out. And there are still options out there. There are companies that are doing well, and being able to get up out of the morass and look forward. And that's really internal. We're going to have to help them because, again, we can't give them much else as managers at this point. Would anyone either agree or disagree with that?
Okay. Everyone listening in probably agrees with that. The other thing that we've talked with the staff about is because of these uncertain times, we've mentioned you may have to put in a little bit more time, maybe a little bit more effort also. Mm-hmm. So rather than, you know, cutting out early or whatever, maybe instead of going home, so you're home at 5 o'clock, work until 5 o'clock or maybe 10 after or 20 after, because it will pay off in the end. So the managers here all are available to ride with sales reps when they have a difficult call, and we do that on a regular basis. So I think that the fact that they know that we're here to support them, or we're aware of the situation, we're not sitting in an air-conditioned, because it's going to be, just so you know, it's going to be 95 degrees in the Detroit area today, and I'm in an air-conditioned building, and they're outside in this heat trying to close a new business. So, but the fact that they know that if they call me, I'll meet them someplace if they need me to, and I think that's important as far as management goes, that they know that they have the support, and I think that's what you had just mentioned pretty much, that we're there to support them. And then also to let them know that if in fact their job is secure, let them know that their job is as secure as it can be. And if they start to drop off and their performance starts to drop off a little bit, that you're going to work with them or make sure that they know that it's not going to just be a shock if you have to let them go because of performance reasons, that they would have known that in advance. you have been working with them, and that kind of thing. I think just that it's not really job security because there is no job security, but the fact that they know that you are working with them to succeed is very important in this time of uncertain economic conditions.
Couldn't agree with you more, and I'm glad to hear from you folks in Detroit, which is maybe the hardest hit city in the United States in this regard because of the motor industry. We need to do things differently, and folks, for those of you that aren't from the newspaper business, one of the things that, and I have some background in it, one of the things that we did when times were prosperous is we made our leaders, our managers, who are really our field generals, we turned them into accountants, and they sat at their desk and they'd fill out forms and spreadsheets and flashing what kind of results would be in the next hour and the next week in terms of profitability. But anyway, and I like what Elaine's doing because we can't do anything other than support them, and so we're getting, as I understand it, you're getting away from the desk, getting out in the field with them, and literally, I think that's a great motivator.
Yeah, and you know, if you look at any of the studies about why employees like to work for certain companies or why they would leave under different circumstances, they say the number one reason that people leave their jobs is they don't feel appreciated by their managers. Now, you may not have a situation here where people are going to leave because they need the job so badly, but it still tells us something about how important that is. That personal connection is just so important. So I really liked what you said about the kind of encouragement you're giving people and the fact that you're keeping them informed. One thing that I rode through with Procter & Gamble was a 10-year change initiative. I survived 7 corporate rifts. Every July, we were facing the possibility of our job not being there because we were gradually restructuring and reorganizing and downsizing over a long period of time. But the way that we got through that was that we had management who really communicated, and it helped us feel valued all the way along.
If you look, if you follow me on page 1 at the very bottom, I'm going to skip over the motivational myths because these are all false. That's the answer to all these. One I know brings up a question that's kind of provocative is, increased job satisfaction may equal increased job performance. It may, but in the majority of cases, folks kind of get complacent, and they really like their job, and they, again, I'm thinking of Elaine, not your staff, but some folks may like to go home at 4:45. They may like to pick up their laundry on the way, all that windshield time for the outside reps. So job satisfaction doesn't necessarily lead to job performance. Let's look at the bottom of the page. It's a great quote from Sir Edmund Hillary, who talks about, again, personal responsibility. It's not the mountain we conquer, but ourselves. And literally, I think that's the message that we need to give to our folks. Join me on page 2, please.
You know, I really love that quote, Bill, because I've been a self-managing person for a lot of my life, and it's interesting to me. You know, I ended up when I, after I went to Franklin Covey coach training, I went to the self-management school of coaching, and that's one of the things that I do is I coach people in self-management and coach managers in creating self-managing cultures. Well, I love the quote from Sir Edmund Hillary because I have faced that. As a sales rep working independently, we face that a lot of the times where you get up in the morning and you really have to figure out how to motivate yourself.
If you look at there's a, at the top of page 2, we have the belief system. And I want to share this with you. in a longer presentation, we'd go over a lot of the motivational theories that led up to this most recent one. And a lot of them had to do with external and internal rewards. In other words, increase in pay, increase in time off, a parking place with their name on it, that sort of thing. And the Merwin Hayes and Thaddeus Green wrote a book recently called The Belief System. And what they've done is they've sort of turned that on its head. They've turned it upside down. And they believe that there's three levels that we have to master in order to motivate or create a motivational environment. And the first, they call them B1, B2, and B3. The first one, and by the way, if you don't have the first one, then we need to stop there and fix it because the others won't help. The first one is confidence. In other words, they can believe they can do the job. This is particularly true for folks that are working in an economy. If they're in sales, for example, and the opportunities aren't as great as they used to be, they have to believe that there is a business opportunity, that there are new businesses, as you all pointed out, opening up, and we have to find them, we have to work with them, we have to offer more. Folks also have to have the confidence that they have this knowledge and skills and ability to do the job. If they feel they don't, then they won't be as motivated. They might give lip service. And finally, they have to believe that they have the support from the company. And that kind of takes us into the second level, which is trust. So confidence, in other words, in order to be, if you will, to tap into that full motivation, folks need to be confident that they can actually achieve. That's a tough nut, and that may be where we want to stop when we're talking with our staff. The second thing is trust, and that is believing that the outcomes that they receive will somehow correspond to how well they did the job. And this has a lot to do with history. I know we're picking on salespeople a lot, or at least focusing on them, but in my experience, working with sales folks, that sometimes they'll really work hard on a project, but they won't get rewarded because someone else had a better territory or an advantage in some way. And they won't get the recognition, they won't win the contest, that sort of thing. And that sort of builds up, and there's a lot of blame sharing going on. So we need to know, secondly, whether they actually trust that if they work really hard, they'll get some sort of reward for it. So if they are confident and they do have trust, the last thing is satisfaction. I believe that what I get will be satisfying to me. Well, think about money and paychecks and bonuses and that sort of thing. Carol, I remember we had a conversation that
I was telling you about, I think I commented that I'm sitting here in my office, and when I look around, I see that even though I left Procter & Gamble 5 years ago, I still have trophies and things that I won around here. And when I look at them, I re-experience that sense of satisfaction and pride and also a connection to the company. And yet when I think back on a vacation I may have taken because of a bonus, I won't remember that that was because of that bonus. Or, it just wouldn't occur to me to associate those great memories with what the company did for me. So it's interesting to me because people will often say to you, well, what I really want is money. But we need to balance, I think, our reward systems so that there are things that stand as reinforcement in a lasting way, too.
You bet. In this current environment, sometimes we can say, well, if you work really hard, you might be able to keep your job. And I don't know how satisfying that is. It sort of feeds the uncertainty. What would happen if somehow we're able to give them some peace of mind? Maybe that's – we need to ask them what the whole point of this is. In order to make sure that what we're offering is what they want, we try to find out what it is that they want most. And in some cases, they just want to know that if they work really hard, that they can either – keep their job, but if they lose their job, they have skills that they're learning that they could apply someplace else. So So again, belief means the B1 is that the person's evaluating whether they can be successful. And the B2 level, if that's okay and they believe they can be, then they want to know, is there really a possibility of being rewarded, or is there some history in the background of the company they're working for now or previous companies that maybe they didn't get rewarded, that things got changed, they put a lot of effort going in one direction, the direction was changed, and now they have a bit of an attitude about, well, we'll wait and see. I don't know if I'm going to commit to this.
I wonder if helping people take a longer-term view is helpful too, because some of our rewards may be delayed. It could be we're in a situation where there's a salary freeze or promotions aren't being filled or whatever. However, we're hearing that this economy will begin to improve in the fall. So if we can ride this out, we may be able to crest the wave and move on later. So maybe we need to hear from our management how their efforts now will pay off in the long run.
Yep.
For example, with the newspaper advertising, helping the small business owner who's starting a new business get their business off the ground, as their businesses grow with the economy pumping again next year, those accounts will grow and the opportunity for better and more advertising will increase.
I agree with that. We're a weekly newspaper, and we build partnerships with these businesses, and we tell them that the effort and the money they put into their marketing plans will gradually increase their market share, so when they come out, they'll be on top. And it's the same thing. The amount of groundwork that a salesperson does right now, it might seem like a lot of work, but it pays off. All of that stuff will come to fruition when sales pick up as the economy picks up.
Right. Even building that relationship now and strategizing for something that someone, may not be able to afford at this moment, but they will be in the future, showing them the pathway there.
And
yeah,
it's like
sowing your seeds now so that they grow in the future.
Right. Bill, I'm just going to give you a heads up on time.
Yeah,
it's 1:38, so I'm going to be quiet for a minute so you can get through this.
Okay. Folks, I just wanted to comment. Make sure that I've read the articles. USA Today had a good article on the economy starting to turn around in September. Just manage their expectations that although it is going to start to turn around, it's going to take a little time to turn around, just like it took a little time to get where we are. So that we don't run into a B2 problem with them. So there's some places to make some notes in the middle of the page about addressing these problems. If you look at B1, a confidence problem, if it's skills, then this is really intuitive. If they're missing skills, the solution is to work with them, and it sounds like a number of you are doing a lot of ride-alongs with your sales reps and working directly with folks. If it's structure, then giving instructions and communicating, the next two are really important. I want to share a quote with you. If you don't get my weekly quotes, I sent this out last week because a lot of my clients are experiencing this. This is a quote by George Bernard Shaw. He said, "The single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it's taken place." So what I mean by that is that to make sure that we over-communicate, that the folks do understand what's expected of them, and they understand how to do it, and they understand the structure. That's extremely important. I mentioned aligning expectations so that, the light bulb isn't just going to be turned on September 15th. However, they will see gradual increases. And if there's a history of failure, then we need to build their confidence. And, of course, the way we do that is by setting some real short-term goals for them and celebrating those goals. So it may be, as was just mentioned, celebrate the fact that they're out there building partnerships, not necessarily that they're getting business. B2, again, that was the trust issue. Here we have, if if the rewards are not tied to performance, then we want to look at logical and natural outcomes. Some folks, some of the Adlerian psychologists do a lot of work on this, but let me give you an example of when we're parenting, and sometimes supervision is a lot like that. If someone doesn't do their homework, then sometimes parents will make them take out the trash for a week or for a month. And there's no logical connection between taking out the trash and not doing your homework. So what we want to do is to try to say, okay, well, then you can't play on the computer for an hour. You have to do your homework. That's more of a logical connection. So once we want to then tie these outcomes maybe even to new types of rewards. In other words, if you do this, I'm going to spend 1 hour a week with you improving your skills in one of these regards. You name what it is. And again, if there's a history of disappointments, then we really need to have them focus on the future. On satisfaction, the B3 factors, some of the causes of what they're getting isn't what they want, and then the key to all this is trying to figure out what it is they want, and if possible, giving it to them. And maybe job enrichment. In other words, some folks are bored, not necessarily the sales folks, but some folks are bored. Let's say they're in a service environment and they're servicing the same thing. I know Pat's with Teltronic, and some of your technicians may be doing the same thing over and over again, and they may want to learn something new. So we tie that to their performing their current duties to the best of their abilities. And then we can add in some job enrichment or job enlargement. Sometimes there's a feeling of inequity. Some people are getting more than the other person. We really need to address that fairly early on. There's a quote at the top of the third page, which is, be the change you want to see in the world. And Carol, I'm going to have to have you unmute for a second. I know you're not muted, but...
No, I'm not. Oh, unmute my mouth. Okay, I'll answer. This is one of my favorite quotes because I think it applies a lot to a lot of things. You know, we set the example. As leaders in our organization, as managers, we have to model exactly what we want other people to be doing. So right now we are in a business cycle that's demanding constant change. So we have to define that for ourselves and for our organization, and then we have to be out there modeling it in every way we can. And that's why I threw this in. Bill prepared this this guide, and I threw that quote in, and he noticed that this morning. He said, well, where'd that come from? But that's why I put it in there.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, the sum up, you'll see on page 3 there's an improvement process. This is just like any sort of performance improvement that you may have seen in any leadership or supervisory management program. We want to try to understand the issue, and we do that by just the one-on-one conversations, and not necessarily coaching or counseling, but trying to get to the root of the issue and not assuming, and determine the impact on them or even on yourself. If you're working on personal motivation, I would suggest that if you have a really good friend who will give you honest answers, that's a good person to talk to. Most of our really good friends lie to us, and we love it. If you're working with other people, that's where the mentoring, that's where your role as a leader or perhaps coaching might be helpful for them. We want to try to diagnose what the problem is and then look for options. Folks, in a lot of my presentations, I think people have butt problem, and that's spelt with one T. And you'll hear that when you might be talking to one of your staff and they say, yeah, but, and it's going to be followed with a negative. I can't do this. Yeah, but there's a problem. And that just tells us that they don't see options. And one of the best things you can do to motivate folks is to help them to see options. And then the rest is again, very much the formula for supervisory. Establish goals, short-term goals, give them reinforcement, follow up. And since we are close to the end of the time, one thing I'd like to do is to ask folks now, to follow on Elaine's question, what are you doing now to motivate your employees and to motivate yourself. I'm going to call on Pat.
You just wanted to see if I was sleeping or not?
Yes, sir. I wanted to see what if you're playing on your computer. Pat.
Well, we're not doing much at all. That was the main reason why I was listening in on this call, because something that we do need to concentrate on, and you know, other than monetary rewards, we really don't do a lot to motivate people.
Well, you know, one thing that I'm going to do as a result of this call, and this came to me during the call, is I have this wonderful file that called 66 Ways to Celebrate People. And it's not an original. It came from someone else, and it's noted in the file. But I'm going to send this out to everyone on the call. These are some very small things that you can do. In other words, they don't cost a whole lot of money, but they really help you to reinforce and recognize people in ways that just make them feel appreciated. So everyone who registered for the call, so we have your email address, will get this from Bill and I after our call today.
Lou, did you have something that you'd like to share?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm certainly in a different situation than everybody else on this call. Because I'm unemployed right now, and I think the biggest thing for me is to motivate myself.
Yeah.
However, this has been valuable for me because, you know, going into the workforce, looking for jobs and applying for jobs, you know, I think that and this is maybe something for the people who have work out there looking for people, is that, you know, I'm looking at companies out there just, you know, with my objective to just find a job at this stage of the game, but yet I think that it's more important to, you know, I guess I don't want to find myself back in the same situation. I need probably to, you know, do a little bit better job of evaluating the company and making decisions, you know, my decisions as to whether I want to, you know, exactly what I want to do. Whether I would want to join a company, you know, is it a motivating environment? You know, is it a situation where your supervisor is, going to be reflective of you know, positive reinforcement? I share a story with everybody out there because, you know, you're looking for employees too. I was at a meeting last week with another unemployed person who was out on an interview, and she told a horror story about this interview. I mean, the hiring manager, you know, made this individual drive from one place to another store. It was retail sales position, and he was just, it just didn't seem like he was very people oriented, and bottom line here, without getting into a lot of discussion, is that obviously the lady says I'm, you know, staying away from that company completely. So, so it's important that you deal with people the way you want to be treated, and I think that was what your theme was today. But as far as, you know, self motivation. You know, every day I get up, and you know, you just got to say to yourself, and you know, look at the opportunity that every day presents a new opportunity, and you don't know where that opportunity is going to come from. So I kind of stay motivated by looking at that from that perspective, keeping my head up, and saying, you know, you never know what's going to happen, and opportunities out there. There's lots of opportunities, and just, you know, stay in the game, because if you're not in the game, the opportunity is never going to come.
You really have to fight the demons. And one thing, I got a book a few years ago that was the things that I should be thankful for, or words to that effect, and it had literally hundreds of really very minor things. I'm wondering if the next time you have a staff meeting, that you don't say, okay, after we get the Ain't It Awful out of the way, what can we be thankful for? Well, we have a job. What else can we be thankful for? What can you know? What's going on out there? That, and we're really dealing with change, and perhaps working with them to understand that how change works can be helpful.
Yeah, we really have to own some responsibility for keeping everybody's attitude up, and I think that's one of the greatest things that we can do is to put on that to really draw out all of the positives that there are. If people are sitting in a room with you because they are working, there is a huge positive, a huge positive. So.
We want to fight the demons, help them to fight the demons, which is when every day you wake up and just get depressed because of the way things are going, particularly if everything you read in the papers and that sort of thing are negative. Donna, do you have some ideas or suggestions?
Well, I'm not a I'm self-employed. And
okay.
And you work with people helping to keep them aimed toward their goals when you help people write their books and their articles, right?
Yeah, I do a lot of editing work and ghostwriting and that kind of thing. I don't know. My life essentially has – I hear all of the horrors, and I know – I'm in California, so I read – you know, we're up to 11.5% unemployment rate in California, and it's going up. And I hear this, I see my kids, my daughter trying to find, two of them trying to find summer jobs, and they're just not there. But it's just interesting to me because there's this miasma that is kind of hovering, but it is not impacting us directly at this point. My husband has his job. He's very happy in it, been there for quite a while. And it's actually growing in it rather than contracting in it. And so I don't feel that I can really qualify to say a whole lot in that I'm not directly and immediately impacted by it. But I do have a sense that it's a lot more difficult if you don't have something that you can trust in and you don't have the belief that it is going to get better. And being constantly pounded by how horrible it all is. I mean, even at 11.5% unemployment, that means that still 89.5 out of 100 people are employed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get frustrated sometimes because I think it's a self-perpetuating problem in that if it's bad, everybody will talk about how bad it is, and that makes it worse, so it gets worse, and it's kind of on a downward spiral. As opposed to the unrealistic upward spiral we were living in, you know, the bubble of the past decade or so. Having to slam back to earth, but I don't think we need to burrow ourselves into the earth. We need to be grounded and look at what we do have that is really wonderful. And a lot of it has nothing to do with money.
Did
anyone else not know what the word miasma meant?
Thank you.
I didn't know what that meant either.
Look it up. That's great, and I'm going to use it at our next sales meeting. It's a vapor from swamps once believed poisonous. So
wow,
that is an excellent term for the situation. Thank you for using that word.
You're very welcome.
Excellent.
Yeah, that is a good word. Yeah, that's a great word. Thank you. Okay, well, we do need to be wrapping up here, and I would like to thank everyone who's been on the call today. We will send out a link to the recording, and we will also send out the 66 Ways to Celebrate People. In addition to that, we'd like you to know that both Bill and I, through our companies, are offering half-price coaching in July and August, July and August only. So if any of you would like to look into that, you can contact either one of us about that. And you can check out our websites. And the other thing that we are offering is we are each offering one 30-minute complimentary coaching session but you have to own the responsibility for contacting us and letting us know what the objective of that session would be. You have to set your own objective, but that gives you an opportunity to experience some coaching around a single objective. And we're doing that on a complimentary basis only for those people who registered for the call.
And
so, Bill, would you like to say any final words as we wrap up?
I really would. Thank you all for your patience and your contribution. I really wish everybody tremendous success going forward. There is an action planning segment at the end of our handout. After you hang up, or perhaps you've done this already, but jot down a couple ideas that you're going to do, perhaps do something differently or take some sort of action as a result of the things that we've talked about here today. I think that would be extremely helpful in reinforcing what we've talked about. And again, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank
bye.
Bye. Bye now.
Bye now.
Bill, are you still there?
Yes. Anyone else there?
Let me see. I will look back at the website, and it looks like there's one other person who's still on the line.
And that is 5643?
Yeah.
Hello?
410-956-5643. Maybe someone got called away from their phone.
Possibly. Okay. Well, why don't we get together on the landline? I'll give you a call.
Okay, great.
Super. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Bye now.